The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Und die Zeiten, in denen wir uns auf andere völlig verlassen konnten, die sind ein Stück vorbei. Das habe ich in den letzten Tagen erlebt. Und deshalb kann ich nur sagen, wir Europäer müssen unser Schicksal wirklich in unsere eigene Hand nehmen. Natürlich in Freundschaft mit den Vereinigten Staaten von Amerika, in Freundschaft mit Großbritannien, in guter Nachbarschaft, wo immer das geht, auch mit Russland, auch mit anderen Ländern. Aber wir müssen wissen, wir müssen selber für unsere Zukunft kämpfen, als Europäer, für unser Schicksal. Und das will ich gerne mit Ihnen gemeinsam tun.
That's Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, speaking at a political rally in Munich on Sunday. And if you listened closely, those of you, most of you who only know English, you might have heard America and Britannia. She was there speaking in German, obviously, and pointing out that it's time for Europe to go it alone. It's time for Europe to look to itself and to stop depending on others. That's essentially what she was saying there, just to paraphrase. And she said, when saying this, she said, this is what I've experienced in the last few days. She said this on Sunday following President Donald Trump's visit to Europe and to the NATO allies across the continent. Some sharp disagreements between Germany and the United States. And she said there in that speech, and as you know, there's German elections coming up in September. And she's speaking to those in her own land, saying that it's time for Europeans to take our own fate into our own hands. And went on to say there, you heard the word America and Britannia, saying that, well, we'll still keep the friendship with them, of course. But we've got to trust in ourselves. We can no longer trust in our allies, our traditional allies, since the end of World War II. Well, just to summarize, I think if you've listened to this program for that long, you know, you're well aware of President Trump's positions on European trade, on the NATO alliance, and on the climate accords. We're expecting an announcement from his administration any day on the Paris Accords. But with respect to NATO, this alliance that's held firm since the close of World War II, he said, of course, all last year out on the campaign trail, that America is shouldering most of the burden. I mean, we're funding this operation, and none of the other NATO members are paying their fair share. He even said at one point that NATO's obsolete. I mean, they're not even doing their part to fight terrorism. Now, following his election in November of last year, he did seem to back away ever so slightly from some of the strong rhetoric. He had his surrogates out there trying to tell European leaders, look, NATO's still intact. We're still going to support you, but you've got to pay your fair share. Well, that led up to the meeting in March, I believe it was, the president's first meeting with Angela Merkel, and during which he said that Germany owed a vast amount of money, vast sums, I guess is the way he was quoted. They owe a lot of money to the NATO fund. And there was that awkward moment in March when the president seemed reluctant to shake Chancellor Merkel's hand. And there were some more awkward moments from last week with respect to handshakes, particularly with the French president. In any event, that leads up then to the European visit last week. his swing through Europe. And specifically, what President Trump said at that NATO summit on Thursday. Here's what he said. This is clip two. It's what he said in front of European leaders in Brussels on Thursday.
I have been very, very direct with Secretary Stoltenberg and members of the alliance in saying that NATO members must finally contribute their fair share and meet their financial obligations. But 23 of the 28 member nations are still not paying what they should be paying and what they are supposed to be paying for their defense. Over the last 8 years, the United States spent more on defense than all other NATO countries combined.
Okay, so that's President Trump on Thursday railing against member nations of the NATO alliance who don't pay their fair share, and the leaders of those nations are sitting right there in his presence. Yet still, it's not unusual for a U.S. president to complain about NATO dues. I'm not sure there's been a president that's been quite like this, in your face, basically, demanding that they pay their 2%. But what's incredible about that speech from Thursday is not so much what he said, it's what he didn't say. Here he was. I mean, he was speaking in front of the new 9/11 Article 5 memorial. The Article 5 of the NATO alliance that stipulates that when one member of the alliance is attacked, then all members must rise to the defense of that member that's been attacked. And 9/11, as it happens, is the only time in NATO's history that that article was invoked. And so that's when a lot of the NATO states came to the defense of the United States. I think it was, I saw a figure recently with respect to, maybe it was just Afghanistan as opposed to Afghanistan and Iraq, but the number of casualties in Afghanistan, a third of them, most of them were American, of course, but a third of them, I think, were from non-American nations, NATO member states, in other words. In any event, here is the President of the United States last Thursday. He's talking about the commitments that bind the NATO states together, and yet he did not comment on the United States or America's commitment to upholding Article 5 should a fellow member state be attacked. And that's what the European leaders were all waiting for him to say, because they've been to this point with him talking about NATO being obsolete. I mean, they want to hear him say, yes, if one of our eastern states, let's say, is attacked by Russia, then we'll all assemble in defense of that nation that's come under attack. But here he was speaking in front of all the NATO members, all of the NATO leaders. And he had a lot to say about how that there were a lot of freeloaders there. But he said nothing about America's commitment to honor Article 5. Charles Krauthammer had a pretty good analysis of this last Thursday night at Fox News. This is at clip three.
Well, I think we're looking at the wrong thing. I think the scolding was unnecessary, although it has a long history. American congressional leaders going back to the 50s have complained about NATO's lack of contribution, lack of support. There's nothing new there. But what was new, and I think the real headline was, that after everything had been teed up for the President of the United States to reassure NATO that we would stand with them, the president refused to say the simple phrase, we will honor Article 5, which is that if one of us is attacked, all of us is attacked. And the fact that he was speaking at a ceremony to commemorate the fact that it's only been invoked once, when the European states...
Which he pointed out.
He pointed it out, but that's not why he was there, to remember some history. The reason he was there was because he campaigned talking ambivalently about NATO, saying it was obsolete, threatening American withdrawal. He had sent his surrogates to Europe to say, oh, yes, of course we're going to honor Article 5. He didn't say it. It's the omission that is the huge news here. And it's barely incomprehensible because it means that whatever deterrent exists from the United States is thereby weakened by simply not saying the phrase everybody was waiting for.
That's Charles Krauthammer on Fox News talking about the United States last week offering no reassurance to NATO member states. And so the alliance is significantly weakened because of what was omitted from that speech. He went on to say this, I believe this was from the following night, clip five.
But because the world was waiting for Trump to say, I support Article 5. That was the purpose of the visit, and he wouldn't say it. And that omission, I think, is going to have a lot of repercussions, weakening NATO unity over time. And it's really hard to understand why he didn't say it.
So that's, again, from Fox News. And, of course, the repercussions, I mean, they came, I think, a day or two later. You heard Angela Merkel's speech there at the top of the show. I paraphrased it for you anyway. So going back to Thursday, here is Donald Trump, the president of the United States, speaking in Brussels, talking about all these freeloaders in the NATO alliance, and then leaving out the U.S.'s commitment to Article 5, and then following that meeting, or following that speech in a meeting, he railed on the German trade surplus, something he's also talked a lot about during the campaign and early on in his presidency. This is from Spiegel, May 26th, that says, the Germans, this is quoting President Trump, the Germans are bad, very bad. That's what he said in a meeting with European leaders, according to the participants there that then told Spiegel. Spiegel says the participants told Der Spiegel that Trump went on to say, see the millions of cars they're selling to the U.S.? That's terrible. We'll stop this. We're going to stop this. Well, there were other reports since that one where Germany's auto industry rose up and hit back at President Trump, saying that, look, you better be careful. You better be careful what you wish for here. You look at all of our automotive factories in the United States and the tens of thousands of jobs that we've created in the United States. More than 100,000, I think. If the president follows through and puts up all of these trade barriers, if he raises all these tariffs, those jobs in the United States, U.S. workers, they could be threatened. That's what Germany's auto industry was saying in response to what the president said on Thursday. Spiegel went on to say here, according to a report in the German daily, Süddeutsche Zeitung, many EU officials were appalled at how little the Americans appeared to know about trade policy. The guests from Washington seemed not to be aware that EU member states only negotiate trade treaties as a bloc. The article points out how that there were U.S. officials there that thought that they conducted some of those trades independently. But they negotiate their trades or their trade policies as a bloc. So that was Thursday. And then carrying on, of course, the European nations were waiting for President Trump to come out and verbally commit to the Paris Accord on climate change. And here again, this is something the President of the United States steered clear of. He didn't do it. And over the last couple of days, there are reports that he's going to announce at any time that America may well withdraw from the accord. So there's a lot of European leaders that are quite unhappy, that are quite shocked at what has happened over the past week. Agency France Presse, this is from May 28th, a couple days ago. The chancellor had just returned from a G7 summit, which wound up Saturday without a deal between the U.S. and the other six major advanced nations on upholding the 2015 Paris Climate Accords. Merkel on Saturday labeled the result of the 6-against-1 discussion very difficult, not to say very unsatisfactory. That's quoting Merkel. She said it was a difficult meeting, and it was very unsatisfactory. Six against one. The one being the United States of America. That's what she said on Saturday. And then that led up to the campaign speech in Munich on Sunday, in which the Chancellor of Germany told German voters that, look, based on what I've experienced over the last few days, the times in which we could completely depend on others are on the way out. That's quoting the English translation of that clip you heard at the top of the show. The times in which we could completely depend on others, they're on the way out. Those days are over. In other words, the U.S.-NATO collision course is here. The break in the U.S.-German alliance is here. That's where we are right now. And so in response to this speech that she gave on Sunday, you have all kinds of headlines. Some of them, many of you were emailing me yesterday and the day before. ABC, Merkel suggests Europe can't count on the U.S. and U.K. as much as in the past. You think that's significant? That's significant, that headline? Europe cannot count on the United States and the United Kingdom. Those two in particular. Those two. I mean, ever since the end of World War II, it's those two nations, led by the United States, of course, that have rebuilt Germany and that have established this close alliance with its World War II enemy. ABC says here, German Chancellor Angela Merkel told an election rally in Munich, that was the one on Sunday, she told the rally that Europe, quote, must take its fate into its own hands, close quote, pointing to potential differences of opinion with the United States and Great Britain. See, Germany's got some sharp differences now with the U.S. and Britain. And we'll look more at the significance of this coming up in the next segment. Whether you consider it just from a historical standpoint, or, of course, when you look at the prophecies of God. The New York Times had a great piece yesterday following Angela Merkel's speech on Sunday. It was in the print version of the New York Times on page one under the headline, Wary of Trump, Merkel doubts U.S. is a solid ally. Now, there's no love coming from the New York Times toward Donald Trump, to be sure. So you can take some of that, I suppose, with a grain of salt. But for the most part, this article is spot on. It was posted Sunday night at the New York Times website. Here is Germany looking beyond President Trump. The Times says here, Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany, Europe's most influential leader, has concluded after 3 days of transatlantic meetings that the United States of President Trump is not the reliable partner her country and the continent have automatically depended on in the past. Clearly disappointed with Mr. Trump's positions on NATO, Russia, climate change, and trade, Ms. Merkel said in Munich on Sunday that traditional alliances were no longer as steadfast as they once were and that Europe should pay more attention to its own interests and really take our fate into our own hands. That's quoting Angela Merkel. That's what the article's based on. It talks about the U.S.-NATO collision course. It's now here. President Trump sees the Europeans as these nations in Europe as freeloaders who won't stand up for themselves. And they're taking advantage of the United States through all these unfair trade practices. Well, after hoping that things would settle down after the election, now you see the European leaders, led by Germany, led by Angela Merkel for now. I mean, she's taking the hint. She's taking the hint. And it's not even really a hint, is it? When you listen to the messages. Here again, as has been brought out before, I mean, you can sympathize with the United States position. All these other member states that haven't been contributing, just 2% of their GDP. Only 5 of the 28. And President Trump, to his credit, pointed that out. It was an uncomfortable moment for European leaders on Thursday. But here again, when you just think about the status quo since the end of World War II and what is dramatically changing right before our eyes, I mean, this is significant. The German chancellor, she says, the times in which we could rely fully on others, they're somewhat over. they're over. Those days are gone, and she learned this based upon her experiences from the past few days. Okay, she didn't mention Donald Trump specifically by name, but there is no doubting. There is no doubting that she came out of those 3 days of meetings bitterly disappointed and ready to move on. And that's what she told that rally on Sunday night. Look, we've got to fight for our own future. We've got to fight for our future on our own. We've got to fight for our destiny. We've got to take our fate into our own hands. The Times says here, Ms. Merkel's strong comments were a potentially seismic shift in transatlantic relations. With the United States less willing to intervene overseas, Germany is becoming an increasingly dominant power in a partnership with France. It goes on and talks about the new French president, how that he's shown more than a willingness to work alongside Angela Merkel in Germany. Here you have this Franco-German bloc. It's being established. And a massive break between the United States and Germany. A seismic shift in transatlantic relations. The Times says here, and Ms. Merkel sees Germany's future more and more with the European Union of 27 nations, without Britain after its vote to leave the bloc. So it's without Britain, soon to be without the United States. And of course, what happens then when it's finally downsized to the 10, the prophesied 10? I'm getting ahead of myself. It's hard not to. It quotes this fellow in the article, a former U.S. Envoy to NATO. He says, this seems to be the end of an era, one in which the United States led and Europe followed. I mean, that's how Europe had this unprecedented period of relative peace and prosperity. It's because the United States was leading and the rest of Europe followed. So what happens when that alliance breaks? What happens when the United States and Germany meet together on this collision course? It's the end of an era. It quotes this same analyst as saying, today the U.S. is heading into a direction on key issues that seems diametrically opposite of where Europe is heading. Merkel's comments are an acknowledgement of the new reality. See, that's the significance from this past week. Going back to Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the end of President Trump's trip. And then the day after that, well, the night of his departure from Europe, those discussions on the climate accord, very dissatisfactory. Not satisfied with those at all. And then the next day, we've got to move on. We've got to move on. The times in which we could rely fully on others, they're over. Those days are over. That was just the very next day. You talk about a seismic shift. Well, in the same campaign rally, Chancellor Merkel talked about Britain's decision to leave the EU. You've got Britain on the way out, and then you've got the United States. I mean, their position on NATO, on trade, on the climate accord is very different than what we want here in Europe. And so it's time for some seismic shifts in our thinking. And this is coming right up to the German elections in September. Pretty amazing. The Times says here, with her statement, She seemed to be calling for German voters to get accustomed to a more active European role and to more involvement by Berlin in crises on the continent, as well as global ones affecting Europe's future. She's preparing the German people. I mean, and she's not even the prophesied strongman. But she's preparing the German people for a more active European role, which means a more active German role on the continent and abroad. The Times says Mr. Trump campaigned on a platform of trade protectionism, nationalism, and skepticism about multiculturalism and climate change, all issues on which most European leaders disagree with him. Europeans also depend on NATO for their ultimate defense and are more concerned about an increasingly aggressive Russia than Mr. Trump seems to be. It says further on, as they traveled back to the U.S. over the weekend, White House officials said Mr. Trump had succeeded in delivering a blunt message about self-reliance to American allies in Europe. I mean, this is the message that he wanted to convey. And with respect to Article 5, the message he wanted to convey was, well, let's keep it murky. Let's send a message by not saying anything, that we're still going to be a little vague on this because we've got to make sure that they pay their fair share. That's really what he's getting at. By not coming out with a full-throated endorsement of Article 5, he's basically saying, you all 27 of you pay up or else we're not going to rise to your defense like you did after 9/11. That's what's happening. That's the message, clearly, the signal that the United States is sending. And here again, I mean, as an American, you can sympathize with some of the positions drawn in the sand. But we're here. This program is here to point you to the seismic shifts that are happening before our eyes and to explain the significance from a prophetic standpoint. Where is this leading? The Times says here, they said that, this is speaking of the president's officials, the White House officials, they said the president's decision to scold the NATO member countries about their contributions to the defense alliance would reduce the need for the United States to carry the financial burden for the continent's defense. And they said the president's tough position on trade would help protect American companies from unfair practices. It goes on and talks about how that Mrs. Merkel is particularly upset with the president's refusal to endorse the climate accord. And it talks a little bit further, well, about how she was just not satisfied with it at all. Further on, it says the budding, speaking of this alliance coming between Germany and France, the budding Merkel-Macron relationship is important, and Ms. Merkel has moved quickly to embrace him, conscious that he must still try to win a legislative majority in elections next month to be an effective partner. The European Union has traditionally been at its strongest when its two biggest continental powers work closely in tandem. That's speaking of Germany and France. When these two continental powers work closely together, look out. Accordingly, it says here, Ms. Merkel and her top aides held a bilateral meeting on Friday night in Sicily with Mr. Macron and his top officials, German officials said. Most strikingly, the spouses of the two leaders also attended. So here are these meetings going on even before President Trump leaves the continent. I mean, it did not take long for Europe to react. That's what we're learning here. You have that bilateral meeting between France and Germany on Friday night. You have Angela Merkel coming out Saturday night, even as President Trump's leaving and heading for Washington, saying that the climate discussions, they were very disappointing. And then you have her in Germany, back in Germany, in Munich, before German voters, saying on Sunday, we're going to have to go it alone, Europe. We're going to have to go on without the United States and Britain. Well, just to finish up this New York Times piece, it says, in general, Mr. Macron, who will meet with President Vladimir Putin of Russia on Monday, has stressed friendship with Germany, appointing German speakers to critical positions, including prime minister, chief foreign policy advisor, and defense minister. It says the newly elected president also kept the tradition of paying his first official visit to Berlin, doing so on his first full day in office. And so the German-French axis is coming together. The U.S.-NATO collision course as well is upon us. What does this mean? Why is this significant? Well, you can answer that question by looking at just a bit of history. Of course, it takes on much greater significance when you bring into account Bible prophecy as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Herbert W. Armstrong described Germany's devastating destruction in 1944 and 1945 as one of the worst beatings ever administered to any nation. Western leaders from both sides of the Atlantic assured our peoples that a demoralized Germany would never again be able to disturb the peace of the world. But while Washington and London were promising that German militarism would never again be able to strike, Herbert Armstrong was warning the world of one final resurrection of a German-led Holy Roman Empire. Only a very few listened. Mr. Armstrong said German industry and the German people's willpower and determination to work, produce, and organize was the very heart and lifeblood of all Europe.
The nations of Europe want to unite. They just don't know how to do it.
He said the prostrate body of Europe could not come back without the leadership of a revived and vigorous Germany.
And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
The world is witnessing history repeat itself one more time. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire for more on this important subject. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Yesterday was one of the unique days on the calendar with holidays in the United States and Britain. It was a bank holiday Monday here in the UK, and of course in the US it was Memorial Day. We took that opportunity to play a repeat for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, our interview with Nicholas Frank from last Thursday, which had quite a few people listen to it on SoundCloud and over Facebook and our YouTube channel and even on Twitter, a huge response, and quite a few emails that have come in response to that as well. And I tell you, reading the news over the holiday weekend, following that interview and all the preparation that we put into the interview, the background reading that we had to do leading up to it, and then talking to Mr. Frank himself, This German author, retired now, but still writing and still warning about Germany, saying, look, it's a mistake for you to trust us. You better be careful. If you listened all the way through to the end of that show, I said there, look, we've just got a little bit of time left. What would you like to leave us with? And he said, watch the Germans. Watch them. Where are those warnings today? You don't hear them except on this program, except at thetrumpet.com and in the Trumpet magazine, except coming from my father and his many booklets and books. You just don't hear it. Look at the significance of these events. A seismic shift just in the last few days. I mean, going before that, if you look past over the last 70 years or so, the peace, the prosperity, the tranquility. I mean, this was unprecedented on a European continent that's known more for having the most advanced and deadly weapons and armies. that mankind has produced. It's been a war-torn continent. And yet, following World War II, you have this very unusual period where the United States worked with Great Britain to rebuild Germany, to rebuild that ancient Assyrian empire, but then to preside over it. And there was Europe. There was a German-dominated Europe caught between two superpowers, the United States and the USSR, later Russia, with the United States basically there as the protector of Western Europe. We'll protect you, and you'll no longer need to maintain this deadly arsenal, this world-class army. And that'll serve our purposes along the way, because then we can know that you won't ever rise up again to disturb the peace of the world. And so that's what then brought on this extraordinary level of peace and prosperity, tranquility. Now we're witnessing a seismic shift. I mean, even during that Cold War period, with the USSR trying to gain the upper hand, I mean, their main strategic goal regarding Europe was to drive a wedge between the US-German alliance. And now look what's happening. Look at what's happening. From Politico, this is from a few days ago. It talks about how Donald Trump wants Germany to take the lead. Well, they're doing it. They're doing it. And look, as Nicholas Frank brought out last week, I mean, much of its military equipment is old and dilapidated. But it didn't take Hitler very long to turn an old and dilapidated military force into one of the most advanced and deadly forces on Earth. It took a few years. A few years. How much quicker could it come together, given technology being where it is today, and given the wealth right now anyway? An economic crisis is coming. Nicholas Frank warned us of this. You better watch Germany. All it would take is a few years of an economic downturn, and then those old demons will return. Politico says here, any calling out of Germany by Trump would not only risk offending Merkel. This was actually written in the lead up to President Trump's visit to Europe, saying that any calling out of Germany by Trump would not only risk offending Merkel, who is widely regarded as Germany's preeminent leader, it would also fail to grasp potential misgivings in other European capitals over a heavily militarized Germany. That's what so many people in the Trump administration are completely missing. They're completely missing the point on this. In that while there are some member states embracing German dominance, there are some as well who are very much worried about it. And so we begin to get some insight into how that group of 27 will be whittled down to the 10. The 10 who really are embracing Germany as the military force and power of the continent. It says, any quick major muscle movement by Germany has repercussions across the continent and awakens old ghosts. That's according to one senior NATO official. It's awakening old ghosts. Well, there's another piece here following that that New York Times piece that I read in the first segment. How's this for an explosive headline? It's at the National Interest. Is Trump pushing Merkel to create a German superpower? And why aren't more people asking, is this something we really want to do? A few have asked that. And when they do, you can be sure we find it. And we tell you about it on this program. But why aren't there more? Is this something that we really want? For Germany to be a superpower again? What about Germany, equipped with nuclear weapons? Will that bring peace and stability and tranquility to Europe and the rest of the world? What has been the history? The National Interest says here, Donald Trump entered office hoping that he could splinter the European Union. You remember that? He came in, he said, this is great, Brexit? Yeah, well, I hope France goes for Le Pen. Let's get it moving. Let's break it all apart. That was just a few months ago. He came into office hoping to splinter the European Union. But what if, listen to this, what if his presidency has the effect of further unifying it against America? What if this works out in the exact opposite way than we were hoping or we were anticipating? Well, the European Union is in for some restructuring. It will be downsized. Bible prophecy says so. Revelation 17, 10 kings. Daniel 2, 10 toes. God tells us what's coming. God prophesies what's coming. But what an amazing analysis here. What if it ends up further unifying this core? I'll add the word core. What if it further unifies the core against America? Is that something we should be discussing? Is that something we should at least be concerned about? It says here, German Chancellor Angela Merkel's announcement that Europe can no longer rely on America as a partner and must take our destiny into our own hands. This is following her comments on Sunday. This marks a turning point. It says every American administration since 1945 has tried to work closely with Germany and NATO. Okay, there's been the criticisms along the way. You member states have to pay more. But look, we're not going to let this alliance be severed. Article 5 stands. You've got America's backing. In fact, you've got America taking the lead. That's just been the status quo since 1945. But it says here, Trump is pushing Germany and Europe in a different direction. Now that France has elected Emmanuel Macron president, Merkel is moving to fashion a Franco-German axis that will pursue a common economic and military path. It's not just an economy, a common economic path anymore. It's now a military path, and it's happening fast. Listen, it's happening fast. It says this will signal a significant diminution in American prestige and influence abroad. Imagine, for example, that it goes on through some scenarios. What if Germany draws the line with respect to Iran or North Korea, and it's different than what the United States wants? It says here we aren't there yet, but Trump's approach to Europe and elsewhere has been predicated on the notion that he can single-handedly defy the rules of the game and extract what he wants. The problem is that he is emboldening Germany to become the superpower of Europe, and inevitably, it will pursue what it considers its own interests. That's from the National Interest, May 28th, just the other day. The problem with this, again, it's not that the United States, that America doesn't have any grievances, legitimate grievances. But the problem here, and this is what so many in the Trump administration are overlooking, they're clearly overlooking it because this is what they're promoting. This is what they want. They want Germany to step up and to pay their fair share, to pay more than their fair share, to take the lead themselves, to take the lead so that Europe can defend itself and not have America to rely upon. The problem is that he is emboldening Germany to become the superpower of Europe, and inevitably it will pursue what it considers its own interest. When you have a German power, a superpower, flexing its military might, its military muscle, and then carrying on in pursuit of its own interests, that is a dangerous mix. And history teaches us this. It says here, so far, Merkel is focusing on building up a joint military command in Brussels, improving relations with Poland, It says, with Britain out of the picture, Merkel reckons she can move more quickly towards solidifying common EU military measures. I mean, that if that wasn't enough, Brexit, to really accelerate all of the discussions and plans leading to an EU military, if that wasn't enough, then along comes Donald Trump saying NATO's obsolete. You guys are nothing but a bunch of freeloaders. You're cheating us on trade. Are you really allies? I mean, you seriously, compare this with what the Trump administration has said about Vladimir Putin. I mean, the praise that he's given to Vladimir Putin and the king of Saudi Arabia, and even talking about the dictator in North Korea being a sharp cookie. All of this praise for these kinds of tyrants. And yet the strong alliance that was there following World War II with Germany and the European allies, I mean, we see that severing. Is this significant? It's a seismic shift. It's a seismic shift. I've had this piece here from Foreign Policy. I think this goes back a week. I just haven't had time to get to it. We've had so many other things going on the program here. But this is before the trip, before Donald Trump's trip to Europe. It says here, Germany is quietly building a European army under its command. A European army under its command. And this article talks about Germany bringing in Romania's military and Czech forces, the Czech Republic, and bringing them under German control. That's the gist of it. It talks about how that every few years you have, you know, these commentators that say, oh, the idea of an EU army. And then there's a big, you know, a big to-do made over this commentary. And then it's just basically something made out of nothing. The fuss dies down. It was just an overhyped story. But as Foreign Policy says here, this year it's different. This year, far from the headlines, Germany and two of its European allies, the Czech Republic and Romania, quietly took a radical step down a path towards something that looks like an EU army while avoiding the messy politics associated with it. It's going on quietly. And then what of the other headlines that we're seeing of late? Nicholas Frank even brought this out last week. How many Nazis there are in the Bundeswehr? A shocking study. Nazi sympathizers right in the German army. They're there. Even sympathizers in the German leadership of the Bundeswehr. And then this, far away from the headlines, Germany building a European army. It says further on in this piece, again, this is Foreign Policy. Now, Richard Palmer might have gotten into this a little bit last week. I think he might have tweeted out something on this particular piece. But it says here in Foreign Policy, for Germany, the idea is to share its resources with smaller countries in exchange for the use of their troops. So Germany shares the resources, and then the smaller countries turn over their troops, their armies, in other words, to Germany. Pretty good deal for Germany, I'd say. Well, but the German army, I mean, it's old, it's run down, the equipment, that is. It's dilapidated, and at least it'll take a long time for that to rebuild, really. How long do you suppose it would take? When you start incorporating the forces and the powers of the other nine, there's 10 of them, remember? You bring in the nukes from France, already you've got nuclear power. And then these other armies, in exchange for German resources, Germany's the economic powerhouse. Pretty amazing piece. Foreign Policy says, of course, since 1945, Germany has been extraordinarily reluctant to deploy its military abroad until 1990, even barring the Bundeswehr from foreign deployments. Until 1990, I mean, who has been there every step of the way? as reporting on the coming out of the German army. Germany, the German superpower, reintroducing itself to the world. Only we here at the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, the Trumpet website, thetrumpet.com, Key of David, of course. Well, switching back to this national interest piece, this is the one, by the way, that has the headline, is President Trump pushing Merkel to create a German superpower? That's what's happening. Germany is pushing, sorry, Trump is pushing Germany to become a superpower. The national interest concludes here, saying there is little appetite, at least as far as I could tell, at the conference in Berlin, sponsored by the American Council on Germany and at the German Foreign Ministry, for transforming the country into Führungsmacht. That's the German word that I surely mispronounced, but it means leading power. There's little appetite at this American Council on Germany, at the German Foreign Ministry, for Germany to become a leading power. But Trump, it says, may be accelerating willy-nilly a development that he does not fully grasp. It says, until now, the core relationship in American foreign policy in Europe has been with Germany. That tie appears not simply to be fraying, but on the verge of snapping. It will be no small irony if Trump has impelled Europe to transform itself into a united great power. Now, this brings to mind so many of the sermons and the articles and the booklets produced by Herbert Armstrong and the Worldwide Church of God over the course of decades, based upon prophecies in Revelation 17, Revelation 13, Daniel 2, Daniel 7. So many prophecies about the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. It's forming now in Europe. And as Mr. Armstrong said in a clip we've played often for you, it's just like the human body that can't live without the heart. And the economic and the military heart in that Roman Empire, it comes from Germany. The heart is in Germany. History teaches us this. Bible prophecy does as well. And here is the United States of America, willy-nilly. Willy-nilly, as the national interest says there, accelerating the development of this seventh and final formation. Listen to what Herbert Armstrong said on one of his old radio programs. This is clip 6.
And it doesn't appear above ground yet. The nations don't realize it. We're contributing a great deal toward it. We're helping to build the very Frankenstein that we're going to shudder and fear as soon as it does appear and we see what it really is.
We're contributing a great deal toward it. He's talking about the United States and Britain. We're helping to build it. And it's going to turn into a Frankenstein monster that will then turn on us. One more example from his old radio shows is clip 7.
A union of 10 dictatorships in Europe and in the territory of the old Roman Empire. There is going to be a resurrection of that old Roman Empire. Not very many people believe it, because people have gotten completely beyond really believing that the Bible means what it says. You're going to have to live and see it, and you're going to have to know that God was speaking when he said this thing is coming. Even those that profess to understand the Bible prophecies don't believe it because they don't understand.
That's Herbert Armstrong from his old radio programs talking about that seventh and final resurrection coming right out of the territory of the old Roman Empire. The old Roman Empire, fully resurrected one last time. And yet there was Mr. Armstrong saying as far back as, I don't know the exact date on that clip, 1950, 1960, somewhere in there, maybe the late 60s. Not very many people believe it. Will you believe it? You're seeing it now. Here we are in 2017, and I mean, you're seeing it. You're seeing it happen. But even still, I mean, if we get far removed from the Bible and what it says, there's still plenty of people, even God's people in these latter days, that are sound asleep to what's really happening in Germany, in Europe, in the United States and Britain. Well, chances are, as he brought out there, I mean, that would apply more so to today than even when he said it. You're going to have to live and see it. And then you'll know that it was God who was speaking when he said that this thing is coming. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on another program to start this week. You can email us if you like at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.